Hey everyone, it's been a while. Welcome back or welcome to the Human Condition Podcast. From ancient mythology, which started out as an oral tradition, to the YouTube videos of our time, which are based on our visual processing ability, there is this one particular medium humans have relied heavily on to understand the world around them better and to pass on their knowledge in a coherent, meaningful, and relatable way. And that medium is story. And that's what I want to talk about today. I want to talk about what makes stories special and how, for the most part, they have simple structures, yet the stories themselves can be extraordinary. Stories are colorfully filled with narratives, characters, and plot twists, and we all seem to enjoy those. They're definitely fun, but more importantly, they also form the basis of a huge chunk of human understanding, especially in the realm of ethics. There is a reason Jesus spoke in parables. The best-selling book of all time, the Bible, is essentially a book of stories, which were meant to impart moral wisdom. We don't read the Bible because it's fun to read. We read it because we see some moral value in it. Whether or not these values have a divine influence or are made up by humans is a matter of religious belief, but there's definitely moral content that can be seen in the stories written in the Bible. You can't deny that. The same goes with most religious texts. I, for one, am agnostic and probably atheistic if pushed about divine presence, but I'm nevertheless fascinated by religious texts and their stories, because these stories are very often relatable, even hundreds of years later. I also find it fascinating to think that all the mighty empires with their architectural and military grandeur built by the likes of the Romans and the Persians would only last a few hundred years, but simple words written with ink on paper, which can be destroyed by rain or wind, lasted for over 2,000 years. That's how powerful words and stories can be. Almost everyone listening to this very likely knows or has definitely heard about stories like the Siege of Troy, the Tale of Thor and Odin, the Epic of Gilgamesh, Krishna's lessons to Arjuna in the Mahabharata, the tale of Aladdin from the Arabian Nights, the fairy tale of Cinderella by the German Brothers Grimm, the story of King Rama's exile from his own kingdom, or the legend of the dragon from Chinese mythology, all of which are retold, played, performed, and watched by millions of people across the globe. These stories have survived for thousands of years, simply through being told again and again by generations of humans all around the world. For the most part, these were orally told because not a lot of people knew how to read or write well in those days, and they probably just heard it from their grandparents or parents when they're sitting by the fire at night in the wilderness, and then passed these stories on to their sons and daughters, who then carried them forward until it reached you and me one day. Great storytellers are delightfully captivating. We invest ourselves into stories that we find enthralling. Ideas themselves are amazing, but great storytelling inculcates complex ideas within their stories, like all the great movies that we've had over the past few decades. The narrative itself is just part of the story. The moral conundrums and the virtuous displays of courage and passion add to the story like a complexly knit work of art. So naturally, I was curious and asked myself, what is it that stories offer us and why are we so invested in them? Why do we love stories? Is it their structure? Is it the moral content hidden within them? Or is it the knowledge that we aren't as a civilization alone in our endurance of suffering and glory? The truth, I think, is that stories are part of the human condition. Stories and storytelling has shaped us into beings that we are today, and so they've become a part of ourselves in a way. And today I want to look a bit closely into one aspect of storytelling, which is the structure of stories. Because as a writer, I'm always absorbed by how a story progresses over time and how it shapes itself into one of many different forms. And it seems like for the most part, stories have simple structures. For example, let's take a classic story structure called the hero's journey. First of all, I want to say that I think humans are natural storytellers. I don't think even children need to be taught how to tell stories. They can paint a pretty good story of an event even without the vocabulary for it. Storytelling itself is almost as old as humanity itself, and we don't need to be given a blueprint to tell a story. But still, patterns emerge, and stories, as it turns out, have patterns too. In his book, The Hero's Journey, Joseph Campbell plots out one of the classic story structures, which is called The Hero's Journey. The Hero's Journey is a kind of story where there is a protagonist, the hero, as we call him, and as the story goes on, the hero embarks on a journey which has a certain pattern to it. Let's break it down. So in The Hero's Journey, we see that the hero, before doing anything heroic, is just a normal person living in an ordinary world. But something happens in the hero's world, something exciting or problematic, which calls for an adventure. The hero, who is not yet prepared for the adventure, refuses the call at first because the deed is too massive or just too heroic for him. Oh, and by the way, since we're talking about stories, mostly from ancient mythology, the heroes are almost always men. But in today's world, you can just substitute the hero for a female and the structure still works out. So, we have the hero who is unwilling to take up the challenge because it's too fucking risky or too fucking massive, so he refuses the call to adventure. But then he meets a mentor or a guru who guides his inner self towards believing in himself and motivates him to take up the challenge. The hero then crosses the threshold and goes into the world of adventure. He's still kinda naive, so he goes into the metaphoric belly of the whale. There, he faces trials, makes allies, and battles enemies. But the enemies are just the obstacle to the big challenge that awaits the hero in the metaphorical innermost cave where the monster looms amidst the darkness. The supreme ordeal then is to fight the monster and collect the reward. Once he does that, he returns to the ordinary world, but he is no ordinary man. He is now a hero. Think of stories like The Lion King, Lord of the Rings, Star Wars, The Matrix, or The Hobbit, for example. Let's take The Hobbit. Bilbo is just an ordinary guy, a lowly hobbit from the Shire living in an ordinary world. That's step one, an ordinary world. But then he has to embark on a perilous quest across the Middle-earth, so naturally he gets scared and refuses to do it. There is the call to action and the refusal to do it. But then there's Gandalf, the mentor, who makes him believe in himself and guides him throughout the journey. Then Bilbo has to face many challenges and face the likes of the orcs and the trolls and whatnot. He makes friends and enemies on his journey, which ultimately leads him to the cave wherein the great monster lurks, right? It's all according to the hero's journey. In this case, he has to defeat Smaug, the dragon, and collect the reward, which is the dwarf's treasure. Once he does that, he then returns to the Shire, a totally changed person from the cowardly hobbit he once was. He is now a hero. You can plot a similar structure with the other stories as well. The Matrix. Neo receives cryptic messages referencing the Matrix. That's a call to adventure. He refuses the call to adventure after he speaks to Trinity and convinces himself that it might be a dream. Then he meets Morpheus, right? The mentor. He offers him a blue pill or red pill and tells him things are never gonna be the same again once he makes that choice. He makes a choice, and that is crossing the threshold in the language of the hero's journey. He faces tests, makes allies and enemies. He then approaches the innermost cave. The oracle tells him that one of him or Morpheus will die, and Neo has to choose who survives. He then faces the supreme ordeal when he's ambushed by agents in the Matrix. He then kills Agent Smith and tells the machines that he will free humanity, which is the reward or the elixir. He completes the hero's journey and is now a different person than the one who started the journey. The same with The Lion King or even Harry Potter for that matter. I'm not gonna break them down and make them boring for you, but they all follow the structure of the hero's journey. The hero's journey acts as a template for storytelling in many cases. This could even be applied to our lives, you know. Granted, the dragon that we need to defeat might not be lurking inside a cave with a fierce desire to kill us, but we do embark on little hero's journeys throughout our life, and come out at the other end as a changed person from the one we were before. Now, let's say you're not interested in having a happy ending where everything is resolved and everyone goes home happy. Stories are representative of life, and sometimes life can be tragic. The wise ancient Greeks knew this better than anyone else, and that's why they were so interested in writing, playing, and acting out tragedies. Writers like Sophocles, Euripides, and Aeschylus were the most famous Greek tragedians who wrote tragedies like Agamemnon, Oedipus, and Antigone, among others. The tragedy itself comes from the word tragodia, which was an ancient song ritual performed in honor of Dionysus, who is known as the god of theater. Tragos means a goat, which was sacrificed during the ritual, and odia or ode meant a song, which is probably where the word rhapsody comes from. But anyway, the etymology of it aside, the ancient Greeks performed a lot of tragedies or tragodias. In these tragedies, more than the character, the focus is on the plot itself, which, even through the best efforts of the protagonist, takes a dark turn and moves towards the inevitable tragic end, which tells us about the imperative and cruel nature of fate itself. Gustav Freytag, a German novelist, was the first one to articulate this technique of storytelling called Freytag's Pyramid in his book that was published in 1863. 150 years later, Freytag's Pyramid is still very popular in writing, storytelling, and theater workshops. It's called Freytag's Pyramid because the structure kinda looks like a pyramid when plotted out on paper. It starts with the introduction, where nothing much happens. The characters, the time period, the tone and stuff are introduced and lead up to the exciting force or the exciting event which forces the protagonist to take action. The next step is the rising movement, which is the first half of the pyramid. Think of the pyramid as a two-dimensional cliff where there is a rise and a fall. In the rising movement, the stakes heighten and the protagonist moves towards the goal and reaches the climax, which is weirdly just the midpoint of the story or the apex of the pyramid. Everything is downhill from now. The hero has peaked, so to speak. The climax is the point of no return from which the protagonist can no longer go back to the status quo. Then there is the fall, where tension builds and bad things start to happen to the protagonist, eventually leading to the catastrophe or denouement, which is the final part of the story. In this part, the protagonist is brought to their lowest point. All their fears have come true and the worst possible thing that could happen to them happens. And scene. That's the end of the story, leaving us all in a tragic mood. A lot of Shakespearean tragedies are written like this. Think of Romeo and Juliet, which ends with Romeo finding Juliet, thinking she's dead, and killing himself with poison, only for the audience to realize that Juliet wasn't dead and was only pretending to be dead. Now that she sees Romeo really dying, gives him a last kiss, and ends her life with Romeo's dagger. There are quite a few modern stories that fit Freytag's Pyramid. For example, Hansel and Gretel, German fairy tale, The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, and Titanic are some of the stories that follow Freytag's Pyramid. So you can see how a lot of stories have these emerging patterns. One of the literary giants of the 20th century, Kurt Vonnegut, has a 17-minute video on YouTube in which he talks about the shape of stories, and it's funnier than most stand-up comedies you'll have watched. If you haven't watched it yet, go check it out. And in that, he explains how stories have really simple structures. Most stories can be plotted out using an X and Y axis. The Y axis represents the scale from good fortune to bad fortune. The X axis runs from the beginning to the end of the story. The most common type of story, according to Kurt, is called Man in a Hole. It's when the story starts with a person having some good fortune, but he falls in a hole or gets in trouble and gets out of trouble. Simple. Another kind of story is called Boy Meets Girl. This is when the main character comes across someone wonderful, loses them, and gets them back forever. Think of Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Another type of story is where the character starts at rock bottom and then discovers that there is a rockier bottom and keeps falling deep into it forever and ever until the story ends the misery. All this may sound formulaic and stereotypical, but it's true, you know. Almost all stories, even the most brilliant ones, have a simple theme and structure. As an Indian, I look at the film industry here with over 1,000 movies produced every year, and most of them share a strikingly similar theme with some very typical characters. These characters almost always include the hero, the villain, the heroine, her best friend, and there's usually a loving father and a cruel stepmother. And the movie always ends leaving the audience with a familiar feeling of being generally happy and proud. The hero and heroine are united, the villain is battered, and good wins over evil. The number of movies, especially Bollywood ones, that fit this theme is ridiculously high. In the late 1900s, there was an explicitly stated formula for Bollywood movies with 2 stars, 6 songs, and 3 dances. I mean, you could make connections of Bollywood's rise to post-colonialism, where people sought escapism from their daily lives and wanted to experience something grand and flamboyant, but it was formulaic and it still had a very obvious structure. But they're still entertaining, you know? They still make billions of dollars every year, and all of that happens with the same recurring theme. Sometimes I wonder, perhaps there's something more to stories than we perceive. Some evolutionary purpose, I mean. Because our brains are also programmed to react differently to information that is given by simple facts and figures, as opposed to passing them on through a story. Didn't you ever wonder why we remember trivial details from our favorite movies a lot more easily than we can remember some important information related to our work or studies? It's because these neurons in our brain fire differently when we listen to the stories. When we get straight facts and information, 2 parts of our brain light up: the language processing unit and the language comprehension unit. But when we hear a story, neural activity increases 5-fold as more of our brain lights up. By lights up, I of course mean that the neurons in that specific area of the brain are activated. Stories activate different parts of our brain: the emotion processing unit, the imagination unit, the emotional reactions unit, the motor cortex, and the visual image processing unit are all active when we're engrossed in a story. Scientists often say this epigram, which goes, "Neurons that fire together wire together." And that might just be the key to us remembering stuff better. On a chemical level, when we hear stories, our brain releases oxytocin, a hormone that makes us care about the people involved in the story. Basically like an empathy juice. But this is precisely the reason why we sometimes get emotionally attached to fictional characters by rooting for them, feeling sad for them, or empathizing with their pain. Even businesses try to develop a story around their brand. They hire advertisers and content strategists to make their story more appealing to a wider audience. A company could just put up numbers and statistics in their ads, which would convey a lot more practical information for the audience to make an appropriate decision as to whether or not they want to purchase your product. But instead, we see advertisements in the form of stories that are personal and emotional. I mean, it makes sense too for businesses to choose stories as the medium, because for a business, the goal in every communication is to influence the target audience, whether it is to change their attitude towards you, to alter their belief, or to provide knowledge. As we've seen, information alone is less likely to achieve these goals in a market where attention is more valuable than almost anything else. Research also suggests that well-designed stories are the most effective way for a business to have influence. So I guess stories permeate into different aspects of our everyday life, and I think it's important that we stop and think about them, understand how they work, and maybe try to get better at storytelling, simply because it's an incredibly powerful tool that we have at our disposal. Thank you. Thanks for listening.